listening to The Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Brought to you by WelcomeToPerfectville.com. Prepare to go deep.
Talked about just how desperate this Miami team was for a win. Entering the day 1-4. There's a Ajayi breaking free again. And this will put it on ice. 62 yards for the Dolphins touchdown.
And what a run it was to ice the game for the Miami Dolphins, a 30-15 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers, the heavily favored Pittsburgh Steelers. What a game that was. My name is Travis, here with you again on the Finalysis podcast, joined by Kevin Dern. And we are coming to you after a victory for the first time this season, as the Dolphins stuck it to the Steelers with a big win, a big performance from Jay Ajayi on the ground. That was Spiro Dedes and Solomon Wilcots? I don't know, something like that. They got weird names. On the call there for CBS, and we're joined here by Kevin Dern. Kevin, how you doing, bud?
Doing good. Nice to celebrate a victory this week, and I know you said that's the first, and it feels like the first after that Browns game, but it was actually number two, but glad to be celebrating a victory.
Well, what I meant to say was the first for the Finalysis podcast, since we haven't had to celebrate a win yet, but I suppose my words kind of stumbled over themselves there. So
I thought the only thing I'd have to look forward to this week was going to be the University of Dayton basketball jersey unveiling, but it's nice to be talking about a win.
New uniforms out there?
New unis.
Nice. Well, I was all in on draft prospects and talking about college football, and I had some games in the DVR ready to roll this Saturday, and I got my scouting in a little bit this weekend, but I'm kind of back on board with the Dolphins now, because a win like that and, you know, seeing the team that I thought we were going to see from the start was fun to see. And, you know, this team really got rolling yesterday in all phases of the game. I think that was the most impressive part about it. And, you know, Jay Ajayi, obviously, the 204 rushing yards, just a dominant performance by a lot of guys, and exciting to see.
Yeah, I think having the five starters on the O-line finally, you know, it comes back and it pays off in a big way. You know, I think no sacks on Tannehill, and, you know, Ajayi obviously had a monster game, and, you know, just always nice to be able to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, and especially here in Bengals country. You know, I walked in the office on Monday morning, and our CFO just kind of gave me the little Ninja Warrior bow as I walked in, and he just said, thanks, you know. So always nice to be celebrating a Dolphins win, and I guess helping out the folks here in Cincinnati too.
Isn't it kind of funny how football does that with relationships you have? I got to work on Monday, and we hired a new gal in the office, and she's from South Carolina, but is somehow a Steelers fan, and my boss introduces me to her as such, and I have this little Dolphins mug on my desk, and I kind of just gave her one of the, oh, you're a Steelers fan, are you? And put, you know, bottoms up it, and just kind of gave her a little wink there. And then also I have the Miami Dolphins flag on the front of the house for Sunday afternoons. I usually go out there sad with my head dropped down, and I take the flag down. But I'm rocking that thing all week, man, because we just beat a pretty good team, a team that a lot of people want to say are going to the Super Bowl. And if it's only for 1 week, it's only for 1 week. But you know what? That's all we got. All we can have sometimes as Dolphins fans. So I'm going to celebrate it. I'm going to enjoy it. And we're going to get into the offensive game film as well as the defensive game film here pretty shortly. But just a little bit of housekeeping first. The cuts on the offensive line I made last week, Billy Turner, Dallas Thomas, and Jamil Douglas all gone from the team, and now we got the, what do we call it back in 2008, the Orca 5, is that what we called them?
Oh yeah, someone, who was that on the message board? I can't remember, but he always had the Orca 5, and the competition is the elixir of success or something was its little tag. I can't remember who.
All those horrible nicknames we come up with, you know, in the same places we talk about Zach Thomas moving to safety, and the infamous Juan Haran, of course, and none of the listeners have any idea what I'm talking about right now, but that's okay. So anyway,
he's bagging groceries for you at a record speed, and I know that.
He's very fast. We definitely know that. So yeah, those guys are cut. The new guys are, or not the new guys, but the old guys, I guess, if you will. The healthy guys, Juwan James, Mike Pouncey, and Brandon Albert all in there. And that combination now led to a 7-1 record when they're healthy out of the past 2 1/3 seasons, I guess, if you will. And I was talking on an earlier show about this, about how people want to talk about how that's a great stat, because we're 7-1 when those three are healthy and playing. We average over 30 points a game, and Tannehill's passer rating is around 100. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, that's more of an indictment of their inability to stay healthy, because as I say all the time, the best ability is availability, and Pouncey, yeah. Albert, and James have not shown that ability, and it's nice to see them back out there healthy, working together. And it looked like a team, a unit to me that was working in cohesion for the first time and had a lot of, you know, in sync type of moments where they were not singing Justin Timberlake songs, but blocking correctly and had their assignments figured out. And it was, I have been talking about power football for the past couple of weeks and how much I love it. And it was awesome to see, man. How did you feel watching us just pick up 10 yards at a time almost on the ground?
It was awesome. And I feel like that's such an advantage for not only the offense, but the defense and the team as a whole. Like, you know, Pittsburgh was gas. You know, they showed that shot of Lawrence Timmons puking in the end zone after Damien Williams' touchdown run. And it's just like, you know, it's nice to see us be able to just grind out a win like that and dominate. And, you know, even to your point with the offensive line, I think we both texted each other the same thing after the game was like, you know, despite, you know, having that trio of Albert, Pouncey, and James back, we were both even more impressed with Tunsil and Bushrod, I think, on Sunday, or at least I was. But, you know, they both looked great. And it's nice to see Jay Ajayi kind of go from the doghouse to the penthouse. And, you know, that was a great performance for him.
It was awesome. And you mentioned the guard play. I'm going to get into that a little bit later. But, yeah, Tunsil and Bushrod were as good as they have been. And it kind of makes me wonder if the lineup the previous week should have been changed. Obviously, the cuts make you realize, yeah, that's probably the obvious thing to say, Travis, but I'm wondering if maybe Jabron Bushrod should have kicked outside somewhere to the left tackle spot and maybe gone with Craig Urbick, who even Craig Urbick got a few snaps at both right guard and left guard this week when Tunsil left the game, and he came into right guard, and they actually slid Bushrod over to right tackle and took Juwan James out of the lineup.
Some positive yards when that happened, if I remember right.
He was in there for the second touchdown run, Urbick was. So it's nice to see them kind of have a rotation figured out. There was a clear plan, which I thought was by far the best game plan of the season for the offense, at least with running those three tight ends out there and just kind of rotating them the way they did was awesome to see. We'll get into snap counts and some stats. And I got a bunch of stats written down here, some advanced stats, if you will, some snap counts, some averages, percentages, and my outline for the offense. But before I get into that, is there anything else you want to cover before I get my my long breath going?
No, I think it was good that they didn't end up altering the game plan a whole lot once Deion Sims went down. You know, obviously it sounds like he's in the concussion protocol, but I thought they made pretty good use of Dominique Jones and especially Marquise Gray. You know, so I just say I'll tip my hat to Gase, and you know, it was a dominating performance, and you know, I know the Steelers had some guys out, but when you run like that, even if they had Hayward and Shazier in, I don't think it would have mattered a whole lot more.
No, yeah, and it is two of their best players, but as you said, we were just dominant in every fashion. I don't think they stood much of a chance on that day. As the Dolphins seemingly brought their A game, whether you know you want to call the red zone breakdowns of, you know, dominant or whatever, but the whole theme of the game was driving the whole football field, and even their punt drives were impressive, I thought, because they were taking time off the clock and they were flipping the field position and making it easier on the defense. And I've been saying this for not that long because I was all in on the passing league concept, you know, a couple of years ago, but over the last couple of years after the 2014 Cowboys did what they did, and then to see him go back to the 2015 mold when, you know, Travis Frederick and Zach Martin and Tyron Smith weren't necessarily at their best, and then see him come back this year, I've just been all about a controlled running game, steady defense, and just keeping the defense off the field. And as, that's what the Dolphins did, you know, 35 minutes of possession, and they just dominated in the trenches. And that's how you can put away teams that have more talent than you, because if they're on the field less, they can't score as much. And I was just ultra impressed with the game plan and the offensive line. And you mentioned Deion Sims, and let's get into the tight ends right there off the top, because that's what I have circled in my notes here is the most impressive part of the game. You know, obviously Jay Ajayi had the yardage total, but the way they use the tight ends was just crazy impressive to me. I got snap counts here for out of the 70 offensive plays, Deion Sims was 47, Marquise Gray was 27, and Dominic Jones was 25. And I don't know if anyone has gone back and checked out my preseason write-ups for the Giants and the Cowboys games, and I was all about Dominic Jones going into the season thinking that he should be on the roster for Jordan Cameron, because I have not been a Jordan Cameron fan for a number of years now, and Dominic Jones was often, he was blocking well, he was engaging, releasing and play action patterns and getting out into the flats and making plays for the offense. And it was much of the same for him and Marquise Gray in this game. Even Deion Sims had a catch. And you could tell that they had a plan. to run the football well and then to use play action passing. And those tight ends, I don't know, was Marquise Gray an H-back in Buffalo, or how was he used there? Do you recall much of his time before he got here?
Yeah, I actually remember him all the way back to his days at Minnesota when he was a quarterback. But as far as I know, in the NFL, before he became a Dolphin, I think both the Browns and the Bills used him as kind of like H-back slash, you know, like third tight end when you're in a goal line package slash like extra emergency quarterback. So, but I think, you know, for the most part, he's always been kind of an H-back player.
And it's fun to see him out there, man, because you get those dreads flowing. He wears number 48. He looks like a classic throwback player in the sense that, you know, he's
faster than I thought he was, too.
He is. And you see that when he gets upfield in that long pass completion. But the way they ran the offense this game was a lot of shifts across the backside of the offensive line where they would have the tight end slanted off either tackle and they would motion across the formation. And Tannehill would typically kind of identify a couple of keys from the Pittsburgh linebacking group and would make an audible or a check or whatever it was, whether it was a dummy check or an actual changing of the play. And then he would stand up and then get back under center. And a lot of those plays were handoffs for 7-8 yards, or they were the little dump off play action passes where the motion man came back across the formation and leaked out into the flat and caught it for a big gain. And the most impressive one to me was that I think it was 3rd and 1, maybe 3rd and 2 late in the game when he had Marquise Gray streaking across right at the line of scrimmage there. And he could have picked up a first down with his legs, but he decided to go ahead and stick it in on Gray, and he picked up 19 yards in the process. So getting a first down and then also a good chunk of yardage there. And that kind of leads me into the next point about the game plan with Tannehill. And I saw this on the message board today. I think it was CK Parrothead, Chris Kaufman, talking about this, about how Ryan Tannehill's a play-action quarterback. He works off the play-action as well as anybody. And we see him getting on the move and not being so stationary in the pocket. And they had these simple two-route reads for him where it was an intermediate to deep route and then an intermediate to shallow route, you know, kind of layering the defense. And then Tannehill also had the option with his legs, which we didn't really see him take at all, but I imagine that's a built-in option there too, because why wouldn't it be? And he was so effective running that offense, and they were working the boundaries of the field, getting the ball out of his hands quickly, getting him on the move. And I think you see a lot of that athleticism with the offensive line coming into play because these guards are getting out and they're able to kind of give him a pocket that can move and roll out a little bit. And the plan was to kind of attack the short boundary of the field. And they did it with some hitch routes and some out routes with Landry and Parker earlier in the game too. And it was just a clear and concise plan from the start. The tight ends played well. The quarterback played well. He was efficient. And I think this is kind of why Dolphins fans get so frustrated with because you go from the Tennessee and Cincinnati game where, the pressure was heavy and he didn't play well. But, I mean, some of the reads he made and the ball placements, the accuracy on his passes was off. But in this game, I can't recall a pass that was not put where it was supposed to be. He was deadly accurate in this game, and it helped his guys pick up a lot of yards after the catch. And I was just super impressed with his game. What do you think about Tannehill yesterday?
Yeah, I remember I always kind of post my review on the game, and I kind of gave him a B- to B+, and maybe I'm being overly harsh, but, you know, I thought he did a great job of managing the game. He made good throws. I thought really the only kind of things that kind of bothered me, and this is maybe just from, you know, a systemic thing of me seeing him in person in Cincinnati and just seeing how bad he was that night. Granted, you have the caveat of the offensive line was a mess that night as well, with a bunch of guys playing out of position, same with the Tennessee game. But, I thought there was a couple times where, you know, his footwork gets kind of sloppy. The one play where, you know, he almost threw a pick in the first half when Kenny Stills fell down, I thought he could have stepped up and either taken off or kind of adjusted that throw. There was one play where they had not really a screen, but just kind of a little flare out pass to Damian Williams. It was pretty open, and he didn't set his feet, and he ended up throwing a one-hopper to him. Mm-hmm. But I think it's certainly, to me, his best game of the season, other than maybe that second half of the Patriots game. But, I mean, that was only a half. It's certainly something to build on, and I'm more encouraged. And I think, you know, we talked about, I think it was 2 episodes ago when we did our roster reviews, you know, I was undecided with him, but I could see how you could go keep him or get rid of him. I think you put a check in that game. You know, if you have an 11-game evaluation of him, you know, I think he's got to hit 8 or 9 probably to be the guy next year. I'd give him a check for that game. You know, he checked that box. One question I had for you, and this one actually came from a buddy of mine who's a big Packers fan. He obviously had a terrible weekend with Wisconsin losing heartbreaker, and then the Packers got smoked by the Cowboys on Sunday. But he had watched some of the Dolphins game, and this is kind of going all the way back to our first episode, and I'll ask it here. Is it fair to say that, like, does our running game kind of match what, like, the Colts had back when they had Edger and James, or is this pretty close to what he had in Chicago? And then the follow-up with it is, we know Gase was in Denver with Peyton Manning. Obviously, I don't think we're running that kind of level of a passing offense, but, you know, for him and myself, obviously I didn't get to watch any of the Bears film when Gase was there last year. Is the passing game that we saw against Pittsburgh kind of similar to what Gase was doing with the Bears last year?
To go back to your first point there about the running game with the Colts, I think you're absolutely spot on there. Peyton Manning always liked running those double tight end sets with the, I guess you'd call it 12 personnel with the one back and the two tight ends, and then he had Harrison and Wayne out there. Yeah, the stretch zone play was money, and that was something we did a lot of yesterday because one of the things I haven't quite gotten to yet was the 13 personnel was out there often. I'm not sure exactly how many times. I was trying to count it, but I was also like eating lunch and working, so I was kind of half in between doing the film study there. They had 23 personnel twice. One of them was on the Damian Williams touchdown where he lines up as a fullback and takes a dive play right up the gut into the end zone, which was awesome.
Literally right into Lawrence Timmons' gut, too.
It made him throw up and everything. I absolutely loved that play. And they tried it earlier in the game, too, when on the play where they got flagged for the legal formation, and they flexed everybody out wide. And the Steelers were just – they were out of sorts. They're like, we got three tight ends in the field out here at the receiver positions and a running back out there. Like, what the heck do we do? So, absolutely they do. And they stack those tight ends, and they motion them across to identify the linebackers, you know, assignments, if you will. And – it allows them to get wider splits and allows them to come off the ball with a, you know, bigger splits and gaps on the running game because they can kind of identify who they got to pick up in the run blocking scheme there a little bit easier. And those tight ends are able to, you know, hit better seals, and they're even some of them are pulling across the formation and making some nice blocks and springing some big runs. So I think that's a very good starting point for what you're looking at in terms of comparing this running game. And in the passing game, you know, those concepts, I don't know how to necessarily match them because the couple of Bears games I watched, there was a lot of heavy personnel with tight ends on the field a lot, and they did get Cutler moving around quite a bit like that, so I would say that's a good comparison. I just wonder why it took him so long to get to that point because it was so effective, and you felt confident in it. They were able to pick up third downs. There was a rhythm about them. There was some juice about them, and I was just really excited to see it. Like, there was a couple of plays where Damian Williams had a run where he ripped off like 8 yards and after contact and made it like a 12-yard gain, and 8 of the yards were just being pushed forward by the line, and Mike Pouncey was there pushing him forward. He came off and started banging his chest and was just fired up.
Yeah.
And you saw like Brandon Albert after a couple of plays was throwing his fist like a fist pump, like a Tony Sperano fist pump out there. And oh man, I haven't been that excited about a game just watching the guys get excited and dominate someone in quite a while because you know, as minimal as the win might be, it's good to see these guys play with some fire and some juice because we didn't have that through 5 weeks.
Yeah, because it looked like to me, going back to the Tennessee game, Miami tried to do some of that stuff, but you know, they just got so gashed and so far down they kind of had to go away from it, and then you know, Billy Turner and Dallas Thomas happened and you're basically, you know, back to square one. But I hope that's something that we see moving forward, especially against Buffalo this week. So I was really impressed with their game plan on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think the one thing when you look for is, and that's kind of the case with this team always, is consistency, because we heard a lot about how Adam Gase will adapt to his personnel, and I think he kind of did that where he had these tight ends that he was, you know, kind of falling in love with in this game a little bit, because Deion Sims and Marquise Gray and Dominic Jones were all heavily factored into the running game and in the passing game. And we saw Kenny Stills' snap count go down, not big time, but a little bit. Devontae Parker wasn't out there for every snap like he has been for the most part. And even Jarvis Landry missed 6 of the offensive snaps. So I think he adapted to his personnel a little bit that he had. And I'm hoping that that's kind of the theme going forward, that, you know, if the Bills can't cover in the secondary, then let's run the receivers out there and run 4 wide and spread them out and get that pass rush kind of stuck there a little bit. So let's go over the snap counts real quick for the offense. like I said, with the receivers, Jarvis Landry out of 70 had 64 snaps. Devontae Parker had 60. Kenny Stills was 54. And I already gave you the Deion Sims, 47. Marquise Gray, 27. And then Dominic Jones, 25. Now, the running backs, this was a model similar to the one they had in Seattle with Arian Foster getting the shoulder of the workload. But it was Jay Ajayi, and he absolutely earned every carry and every yard that he got. He was back there for 48 snaps. Damian Williams was back there for 12, and Arian Foster 11, and Kenyon Drake for one single snap. So I think the running back by committee situation has been solved entirely by Jay Ajayi's performance on Sunday. Dominant, running hard, decisive, was bearing his shoulder, getting every yard out of every run possible. I was super impressed by the guy. I still like to see more out of his pass catching game, but if he can rip off those 8, 9 yard, 10 yard runs at a time, it reminded me a lot of that Knowshon Moreno game from 2014, I believe it was, in the opener against the Patriots, where his presence and his running style invigorated the team to a point where they weren't going to be stopped because it was so infectious throughout the offensive line, and the offense and the defense fed off of it that one player really set the tone for that entire game. And I think he's capable of doing that with his bruising mentality. And I even saw somebody on Twitter say he channels Aaron Marshawn Lynch. I don't want to go that far, but he does have a similar, you know, bruising mentality. And it was certainly fun to watch from my end.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, he doesn't look as thick as Marshawn Lynch, but he's not afraid to run over anybody or at least attempt it. And, you know, those dreadlocks kind of reminded me of another Dolphins running back, maybe not quite as good as old 34, but
you better slow your roll on that one.
Yeah. But it was nice to see someone just kind of, you know, take the whole bulk of the workload and dominate a game. You know, I almost thought having Foster out there was just kind of wasting some snaps. You know, yeah. I would have liked to have seen Damian Williams more. I thought, you know, as far as running the ball goes, Williams had some short yardage carries that kind of brought his average down, but you know, I thought he ran pretty hard, and you know, I think if you can kind of move forward with Ajayi and Williams, and then, you know, you can kind of figure out some roles for Kenny and Drake. You know, obviously he plays a lot on special teams, but I think that's a pretty good three-headed monster, and maybe we don't, you know, as much as you may not like it, maybe we don't have to look at a Dalvin Cook or a Leonard Fournette in the draft quite yet.
That's kind of a luxury position, so I understand that. I look at what, you know, someone like Zeke Elliott or Todd Gurley can do to an offense their first year in, but how much of that credit goes to the run scheme? So I'm with you on that. I think that's something we probably shouldn't be looking at in the first round with as many holes as we have on defense, and we'll get to that with you here in a little bit. Just want to do a little more housekeeping on the offense. I forgot a note here that I had written down about Devontae Parker and kind of Ryan Tannehill's game too. That first scoring drive where Parker had a drop in the end zone on a post route, and it was another one of those simple two route reads where I think it was Marquise Gray took the safety away, and Parker was able to get himself inside the cornerback, and Tannehill put that pass right where it needed to be, and Parker's got to make that catch, man. That was a perfect throw, and I was just super impressed by the throw by Tannehill. And then they come back, I think it was the following drive, they get who was it, Dominic Jones or Deion Sims? It was one of the tight ends, I think it was Sims, on a little stick route in the end zone. And he sits down in his zone, and there's a triangle there, and he just
pulls it. Yeah, it was Deion Sims who couldn't hang on to that one.
That's what I thought. Right off the shoulder pad, man. That's another great throw. So two drop touchdown passes. The long one to Marquise Gray almost went for a touchdown. And his ball placement on some of those throws, like the one across his body to Jarvis Landry down the field, was just, you know, I harp on this every week, and it's still there. There's a couple of throws for me, a couple of reads, I should say, where he's off. His timing is just off, and he's still not anticipating. But he makes up for it sometimes, and I think what gets us all excited is the ball placement. Because when he's on, I mean, we saw it last year when he completed, what was it, like 28 passes in a row or something like that. He doesn't miss. His throws are perfect. Like, you put him out there in the backyard with a tire swing, he's going to throw through the hole every time. And then the next Sunday he'll come out, and he's a statue in the pocket, and his accuracy is off, and his rhythm's off. And I just wonder if there's, like, some kind of formula to get this guy going like this every single week, where maybe they have to get him
– clean, I think.
Yeah, keep him clean. Get him on the move. Get those naked boots, because he gets those little naked boots, and there's a defender in his face, and he has no problem dealing with it. I want to see a lot more of that. And this is a guy that, you know, like you said, you definitely got a check mark in the solid box. I think he's going to need 8 or 9, like you said, to go ahead and do that without renegotiating his deal. I'm hoping for him, man. I'm pulling for it, because I don't want to start over the position if we don't have to. There's a lot more other needs in this team that we could fulfill.
And I thought it. I thought it was like the most ironic thing about that whole game was, you know, he didn't get sacked, but the one time, probably the closest Pittsburgh got, you know, when Pouncey got walked back into him on that Marquise Gray thing, he actually read the pressure, bounced off Pouncey, and, you know, rolling to his left, made probably one of the best throws I've ever seen him make. Yeah. You know, he just chucked it to Marquise Gray. And, like, I was watching it on Game Pass, and they have the view from behind the Dolphins' offense. I still don't even know how he figured out that Marquise Gray was going to be open, you know, and then he throws it and hits him right between the 4 and the 8.
Yeah.
You know, that to me is the most ironic thing, because I feel like a week ago, you know, if that had been Dallas Thomas or Billy Turner, the pressure would have gotten in even quicker and Tannehill would have been sacked. But, I mean, that was a hell of a throw.
It's a great point. It's absolutely true, because he kind of pump faked to the right and then he went back to the left. And if you look at some of the missed throws, even, you can kind of see what the game plan was, because there's some plays where he looks off to the right and his progression brings him back over to the left. And if he sees somebody open, and for instance, one of the plays was, I can't remember what part of the game it was. It was a third down, and he has a check. It's his first read is to the right part of the end zone with the receiver, and then a check down to the running back. And if you come back left, Jarvis Landry's running a little jerk route over the middle, and Landry actually uncovers before the pressure gets there, and Tannehill dumps it off. And I wasn't a fan of that. There's another play where Kenny Stills has a double move on the goal line, and Tannehill had already dumped it off, and Kenny Stills turned the defender around. He throws his arms up in the air like, ah, come on, man, that's easy six for me right there. So there's still some reads he's missing, but if he can continue to throw with that kind of accuracy and play on the run, keep his team on schedule and picking up first downs. I mean, they were 7-for-14 on third down. When was the last time we were 50% on third down? I mean, that's super
impressive. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, that was the best part of the game for me. So speaking of the stats, and then I'll do some stats here, then we'll get to your defense, but I did want to go over some of these stats with you because they're pretty impressive. I mentioned the 7-for-14 on third downs. That's going to keep you in a lot of ball games right there. They had 10 possessions, but one of them was a kneel down, so I'm not going to count it. So 9 possessions with, 7.7 yards. Or no, I'm sorry, excuse me, 7.7 plays per drive. So those three and outs that we were talking about the last 5 weeks, those were a thing of the past. They had a 9 play, a 12 play, a 9 play, a 10 play, and a 12 play drive in that game. So consistency, running the ball, keeping the chains moving, that's you know, the formula to win the game. 474 total yards, 6.7 yards per play. Tannehill was sacked 0 times on 32 dropbacks, was hit twice, and pressured 5 times. We averaged 6.2 yards per carry on the ground, 7.9 yards per pass through the air. We're now the 17th ranked rush offense at 97 yards per game, just the 26th ranked pass offense at 234 yards per game. But Tannehill does have the 5th highest yards per attempt at 8.1 yards per pass. So the averages are there. We just got to stay on the field more. I think we do that by running the ball, you know, committing to the run more and running some more of those short patterns to the tight ends and the flats and keeping the chains moving, because this team is effective with the ball and they have it. They just, those couple of three and outs they have every game are really shooting them in the foot.
Yeah, I think it all goes back to the O-line. Just got the 5 starters and, you know, made something happen.
Well, let's see if they can stay healthy from here. And with that, you know, I'm kind of down on my end with the offense. And Kevin got a chance to watch the defense today a little bit. You know, the coaches pass, I say this wrong every time, the game pass, the coaches film comes out every Tuesday. So he's got his game pass loaded up and he was watching some of it and I watched it today. So Kevin's going to hit you with some defensive breakdowns from the game on Sunday.
Yeah. So I think the first thing, you know, we got to send a big fins up to Rashad Jones. Obviously, you kind of saw the news last night that he may have a torn rotator cuff. He may have a stinger. It may be nothing. You know, a bear might have ripped off his left arm. Who knows? Hopefully he comes back. You know, I don't think we've gotten any official word other than some negative tweets from Ian Rappaport and things like that. So, you know, first off, fins up to Rashad Jones. We're definitely going to need him if we have any chance of stopping the Bills' running game, because it is very good. You know, as Travis touched on, Miami had 70 snaps in the game. Pittsburgh only had 55. And one of the things I touched on last week with Tennessee was, you know, Miami just had some bad players taking a huge chunk of snaps and they had some bad rotations. I think they started to fix it. And I think Pittsburgh's offense kind of lent itself to Miami being in nickel personnel. So Andre Branch and Cameron Wake actually started the game. As far as defensive ends go, they actually played the most snaps out of anyone this week, which is a pretty big role reversal. Branch led the way with 44, 55 snaps. Wake had 41. Jason Jones had 23, although a lot of those were actually inside as a D-tackle on third down. And Mario Williams had 13. Terrence Fidey wasn't active. So that was a big change. Defensive tackles, I think they did a much better job this week. They didn't have a single snap other than maybe the very last drive of the game when either Sue or Phillips wasn't on the field. So Sue played 48 of the 55 snaps, 87%. So he led the way for all defensive linemen. Phillips had 35. Chris Jones, who I was surprised was active over Julius Wormsley, got 14. And then Leon Orr, who had just come up from the practice squad, got one snap. The linebackers, Kiko Alonso, who, believe it or not, actually had a really rough game, played all 55 snaps. Because of the nickel formation, Jelani Jenkins played 37, and then Neville Hewitt and Donald Butler both played 15. Spencer Paysinger came in as a dimebacker on Pittsburgh's very last drive and had four. But I think Miami did a really nice job of making sure they didn't have, you know, two bad players on the same side like they did against Tennessee. I thought their rotations were a lot better. I thought their alignments were a lot better. They had the defensive ends out wide. They did a lot of over-exaggerating on the shifts with the linebackers, which, you know, may have caused some bad things in the run defense. I'll touch on that later. But, you know, you look at it, they got after Roethlisberger. I can't really tell how many times he got hit because it was a lot. They had two sacks in the game. Andre Branch had 1.5. Cameron Wake had 0.5. Branch would have had 2.5 if not for Jason Jones's personal foul, wiping out that third down play. Yeah. And then, of course, Pittsburgh hit us with the Hayward Bay end around for a touchdown the next play.
That was ugly.
That was ugly. And that's really one thing I wanted to touch on later is the run defense. And, you know, I'll get to that. But I thought the secondary probably played the best game of the season. Byron Maxwell, I really have no idea what happened to him, but he was awesome. I think he gave up like four catches total on the day to Antonio Brown for like 39 yards. My fantasy team hates you, Byron, but the Dolphins fan in me loves you for that. I thought Tony Lippett played a pretty good game. He almost had a pick on a Landry Jones throwaway. That was a pretty impressive play. He got matched up a couple times with Sammy Coates outside and didn't really get beat deep, which was impressive to me. Bobby McCain had some really nice plays in the slot. I think they did a really nice job of finally recognizing that, you know, Bobby McCain is better than Michael Thomas as a slot corner. And then they also recognized that Ese Abdul-Kaddous is better than Michael Thomas as a safety.
Yes.
IAQ had 43 of the 55 snaps. I think there were some, you know, formation things where they took out Abdul-Kaddous, whether it was goal line defense or third and short, they put Michael Thomas in. I guess I can buy that because he's a little more stout. And then the only times I really noticed him in as a slot corner were when Miami went to a full-blown six, you know, DB dime package. He would be that sixth guy. He played a couple snaps in the nickel for Bobby McCain on that final drive, but I think that was only because something broke inside of Bobby McCain's helmet because you could kind of see him come over to the sideline and adjust it. I think he was out for a play or two, then came right back in. But I think Vance Joseph and Louis Anarumo and, you know, the D-line duo of Terrell Williams and Jim Washburn, I thought they really did a nice job of fixing some of those bad rotations and getting some players, you know, into proper snap counts. You know, it was good to see Cam Wake come out there and do his thing, especially against a backup right tackle. You know, that was a mismatch Miami exploited. I thought Andre Branch played a really good game. He retraced a screen pass to Le'Veon Bell really well, and I think only let up like a 4 or 5 yard gain on a 2nd and 15. You know, really the thing that kind of bothers me, and I think Buffalo is going to have a pretty good day running the ball against us unless Miami can really milk the clock, is the run defense was still pretty bad. You know, if you look at the box score, Miami gave up 118 yards. If you take out that 60-yard touchdown by Hayward Bay, and then you take out the minus 1 yard carry by Landry Jones to end the half, end the first half, Pittsburgh had 14 carries for 69 yards. That's, you know, not a good average. Pittsburgh almost ran for 5 yards per carry. That's 4.92 yards per carry. And then Le'Veon Bell had 53 yards, but he did it getting 5.3 yards a carry on 10 attempts. They're going to need better play. against the run to stop Buffalo, because Buffalo is averaging, I believe, over 160 yards on the ground, which is first in the league. And, you know, I tried to figure out a handle on some of the issues. And if you go back to the first play of the game, it's just a simple little delay up the middle to Le'Veon Bell. Well, if you watch that play, you know, Andre Branch isn't able to close down the backside, even though he's matched up against a tight end. Jordan Phillips gets double teamed and he's not able to use his hands to split it. And then Kiko Alonso basically guesses the front side B gap, and Le'Veon Bell is able to cut it back into the A gap. And, you know, kind of shockingly to me, Jelani Jenkins actually makes a really good play there and gets off a backer and makes a stop, but he gets 4 yards on the carry. You know, if Kiko Alonso hits his gap or Branch closes down or Phillips is able to split that double team, it's a 2 yard carry at most, because they had guys right there. They just didn't finish the play. Mm-hmm. You know, and you kind of see that a lot. Kiko Alonso, I thought, missed a lot of open window reads, where, you know, an open window is basically if the defensive lineman moves outside or inside of you, you have the opposite of where he goes. And far too often, I think Kiko Alonso just kind of overruns it because he's trying to guess where the ball's going. And the, you know, Le'Veon Bell and even D'Angelo Williams were able to cut back and gain some positive yards on it. If you watch the Steelers' second drive, they get one first down, and then on first and 10 after that first down, you know, Kiko Alonso basically runs himself into a blocker in the wrong gap, and Le'Veon Bell picks up 6 yards on it. You know, he could have been stopped at the line of scrimmage, but he overruns it. You go back and you watch that game, you know, Jordan Phillips is kind of a mystery to me. You know, he should be a great fit for this defense. And, you know, Travis, you had texted me before the game, like, am I seeing something wrong? Like, does he not play the run well? And just going back and watching the bulk of that game, you know, Pittsburgh double teamed Ndamukong Suh and Jordan Phillips quite a bit, you know, both on the same plays a lot of the times. The difference is Suh is just so damn strong. He's either able to push off one guy or he's able to use his hands and split it, or he'll even take a knee and sort of make a pile and make a mess and have the back kind of cut around him. Whereas Jordan Phillips, I think, still has that tendency to try and play high and try and swim guys. And in the NFL, that just doesn't work, other than maybe when you're rushing the passer. So, you know, I think the big thing with Jordan Phillips would just be his hand usage, I think, really needs to improve, and he needs to be able to keep his leverage. But, you know, like, just going back to the linebackers, I don't think Jelani Jenkins really was healthy. You know, you watch a couple of those plays, Pittsburgh hits like two little flare routes to Le'Veon Bell, not even screens, just flare routes. And Jelani Jenkins goes out there and he's just not able to track him down. And you kind of saw that on, you know, the final drive, where it looked like he was in great position to stop him in bounds. Bell was able to turn the corner, pick up like 7 or 8 yards and a first down and got out. And at that point, the game, you know, still wasn't quite put away. I thought Vance Joseph and Matt Burke did a nice job, though, where anytime Miami had their base 4-3 personnel on the field, they actually had Neville Hewitt in the game. And Hewitt's a better run stopper than Jelani Jenkins. But I think Pittsburgh did a nice job of kind of exploiting that. They ran a lot of little tight end outs to Jesse James, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but they exploited Hewitt in coverage. So, you know, I think that's just something Miami's going to have to deal with until we get better personnel. You know, Kiko Alonso, Koemisi didn't play, obviously, but there's one play where, you know, Pittsburgh sets up a bubble screen to Antonio Brown, and you watch it, and Andre Branch is actually able to get out there and kind of prevent Antonio Brown from cutting too far inside. Tony Lippett actually does a nice job of leveraging the outside to give Rashad Jones an angle on the tackle. And all of a sudden you see Kiko Alonso just kind of fly over there and he just straight up whiffs. Well, if you go back and you watch it on the coach's film, instead of actually running through a wide receiver who's out there trying to block, he runs around the receiver and gives himself a bad angle. And Antonio Brown's a good enough athlete. You know, he just kind of cuts back inside and picks up about 8 or 9 yards, you know. Obviously, Miami didn't give up a first down or a touchdown on the play, but we could have stopped him for a 4 or 5 yard gain. And it's things like that that Miami needs to clean up, especially with Buffalo. You know, they have a lot of speed at the receiver position with Robert Woods and Marquise Goodwin. They'll do some creative stuff with Charles Clay. Obviously, McCoy out of the backfield, you know, I think is a big thing. If you go back and, you know, obviously that end around play to Hayward Bay, you know, everyone kind of looks at it and say like, well, Rashad Jones didn't have great form. He kind of came in for a kill shot. Yeah, that's true. But I think the guy who's the main culprit of that is actually Mario Williams. He actually crashes down pretty hard. And I think that's something Pittsburgh probably identified and exploited, because he just loses all manner of contain on that play. Pittsburgh actually ran the same play, but using Antonio Brown the next quarter, and Cameron Wake, of all people, who's notorious for getting upfield too far, is actually able to at least string it out. And then Byron Maxwell gave a much better effort on the second one, and we stopped Brown for a gain of 6 yards instead of 60 yards to Hayward Bay. You know, but I think just Miami had some pretty badly timed run blitzes in that game. You know, there's a couple times where you could kind of see Donald Butler and Kiko Alonso kind of creeping up towards the line of scrimmage. I think that Pittsburgh must have had a good idea of what was coming, because they ran for a 14-yard gain and a 9-yard gain on two run blitzes. You know, that's of that of the 69 yards they had, not counting the Hayward Bay touchdown run. That's almost, you know, a third of it right there, a little more than a third of it. But Miami did do some clever things in the passing game. They came with a blitz with Issa Abdul-Kaddous. I think it was on the very long pass play that Pittsburgh tried to throw, where Neville Hewitt was actually singled up deep down the field. You know, whoever their back was, I think it was Le'Veon Bell, makes a great block on IAQ, but, you know, he could have come in for a sack on that. They blitzed Rashad Jones once. Pittsburgh actually had a quick screen on, so it didn't really matter. They also blitzed Bobby McCain once out of the slot. It was the same blitz that they used against Cincinnati to sack Dalton. Big Ben Roethlisberger actually got the ball off a little more quickly than Dalton, so he didn't get sacked. But I was kind of encouraged to see that. And then one of the things that they did that was new was they had some exotic looks. I don't know if they dipped into the old 2013 game plan we had against Pittsburgh, where I think Olivier Vernon had like 2.5 sacks rushing over the guard. But if you go back and you watch a lot of the third down plays, they actually put Jason Jones at right defensive end sometimes and had Andre Branch kind of stand up over the left guard. And they ran some stunts off that. There was one where Jason Jones crashed inside and Branch runs around him, almost got a sack. There's another play where Branch goes outside and then they had Jason Jones come inside and Sue comes around it. Andre Branch ends up getting a sack. But if he doesn't, Ndamukong Suh is just going to lay an absolute murder shot on Ben Roethlisberger. So I was encouraged to see some of that stuff. Cameron Wake, you really don't have to scheme for him. He just, you know, just kind of blisters by people on the edge. I think Buffalo's had to kind of rework their right tackle situation. So, you know, that's something to kind of keep an eye on, you know, this week against Buffalo. But, I mean, overall, I would say this is probably the third best defensive performance we've seen, all things considered. I thought Seattle and surprisingly Cincinnati were better games, but you know, when you hold the Steelers to 15 points, you're doing something right.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds not like you think that coaching was a big aspect, a big part of that.
Yeah, I think that Vance Joseph had a good game plan, and you know, maybe that's just one of those things where, you know, being with the Bengals, counting that wild card game they saw Pittsburgh in last year, he actually saw him 5 times in 2 years, which is kind of a rare thing. But then you look at it, and the other loss that Pittsburgh has on the season is to Philadelphia, and Philadelphia also runs the wide nine. So, you know, kind of hard to gauge whether, you know, Vance Joseph had just a really good game plan, or if, you know, just that style of defense and that style of personnel is just something that Pittsburgh just kind of has trouble with in general.
Well, it's good to see the Dolphins take advantage of someone's weaknesses, because that didn't seem to be the case through the first 5 games. And, you know, from my viewpoint on offense, it was all about coaching. It sounds like with the snap counts, as well as some of the schemes and the stunting and the different alignments up front, the defensive coaches got to figure it out too. So it's nice to see that happen. I got a couple questions for you, since you kind of rattled off a few notes there. I kind of wanted to get to a few of the things. You'd mentioned, we talked about Jordan Phillips a lot with his poor run defense and kind of his hand placement. And there was one play on the first series, I actually watched a little bit of the first series on defense, where he got a double team and he tried to like do a little Olay around the blocker and swim move and get to the opposite side, then chase around the backside, which, like, I don't know if you know much about basketball, but when you try to chase a pick around the top of the key, you're going to get left behind. And it was a lot like that Byron Maxwell one last week against the Titans, where he tried to swim inside the defender. Yeah. And I guess that leads into my next question, was what was it that made Byron Maxwell play better? Because he shut Antonio Brown down for the most part. And I know our corners don't travel. They stay to one side of the field. Yeah. But when he was over there, he was breaking up passes and locking them up. So was that a coaching thing? Was that some kind of new technique? What's going on with Byron Maxwell out there?
Yeah, from my perspective, what I saw was Miami, instead of running a little bit more of that man-to-man that they'd been running, I think Vance Joseph kind of went back to his roots a little bit, and we saw a lot more cover four, you know, quarters coverage, where it's basically you're responsible for a deep quarter of the field, but you can kind of play your man in that. It looked like they let Maxwell kind of choose his alignments there. You know, a lot of times he gave up sort of that inside because he was shaded to the outside on Antonio Brown. But he gave himself enough cushion where he could close down on any kind of like in-breaking or slant-breaking routes. Really the only one that was tough for him was there was like a hitch route over the middle. And, you know, Brown, he's the best receiver in the league, in my opinion, and just ran a great route on it. They ran a lot of two-deep shell. So I think, you know, Maxwell got a chance to play a little bit more aggressively at times, especially in the second half when Pittsburgh – you know, kind of went into desperation mode and had to throw it, you know, being down two scores, you know, where he had help over the top. You know, maybe in some of the other games he hasn't had that, or if Miami's only had a single high safety. They did that look in a lot in the first half with just Rashad Jones being deep, but in the second half we saw a lot more of Jones and Abdul Kaddous sitting deep. So I think that kind of gives him some freedom. And I thought he did a really nice job of kind of forcing Antonio Brown and kind of using the sideline as a defender. You know, a lot of the throws down that sideline, Roethlisberger, you know, didn't have much of a window to get it in. And then, you know, Maxwell's 6'1 and Brown's 5'10. So you just kind of use that natural length and ability, you know, and he did a good job of using his advantages there. So.
Yeah, I was super impressed with him and most of secondary's play. And then, like you said, the pass rush and the snap counts we were allotting. My next question for you was Cam Wake's snap count. You said 41 out of 55 snaps he was on the field?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that a conditioning thing? Is that an Achilles thing? Why is he now getting more snaps? Because if you ask me, his effectiveness is greater than pretty much any of the other DNs when he's on the field. So why is he just now getting snaps?
Yeah, I think if you go back to the beginning of the season and just if you listen to what Gase and Vance Joseph said, and, you know, obviously being the Dolphins maniac that I am, I listen to as many of their, like, press conferences, especially Vance Joseph, as I can during the offseason, you know, just to kind of pass the time at work and stuff. And I think part of it was they were just generally worried about working him back in. And then the other part of it was I think they kind of had a much higher expectation for Mario Williams to be effective in that role. You know, and if you go back and you look, Mario Williams' best career season in terms of sacks was in 2014 with the Bills, playing left end in a wide nine. He had 14 and a half, the most in his career. So I think they just kind of assumed that, you know, Williams could do it, and then you can keep Cameron Wake fresh, bring him in on third downs, and just get to that pass rush package, which, you know, for the most part consisted of, at least this week, consisted of Wake, Sue, Jason Jones, and Andre Branch. But, you know, Mario Williams hasn't really been that effective. I think Pittsburgh, you know, the last two games Miami played before that were Cincinnati, who lined up in a lot of base personnel sets, Tennessee, who was in a lot of heavy personnel sets. So that really just didn't lend itself to Cameron Wake's game. You know, if you go and you watch him play the run, he still gets pinned inside too easily. You know, there was a couple times where the tight end for Pittsburgh, number 82, his name's escaping me, but number 82, you know, just pins him inside. Luckily, Miami got a break because there's a holding call. Pittsburgh's tackle came out and held Donald Butler and negated like a 9-yard run for Le'Veon Bell. That's always been kind of Cameron Wake's weakness, in my opinion, is he gets either too far upfield or he's not able to set that hard edge. So I think that's sort of the long-winded answer, is they had higher expectations for Mario Williams, and then we heard Vance Joseph kind of called him out during this past week, you know, and then Williams only got 13 snaps. Maybe the one thing is Williams isn't in as great a shape as we thought. You know, playing limited snaps, he actually did better against the run. Made a couple nice tackles, beating his guy one-on-one inside. There's one play where Kiko Alonso misreads the gap, and Le'Veon Bell probably was looking at a 25, 30-yard gain. If Mario Williams doesn't trip him up, you know, he got a 4-yard gain out of it, but it could have been a lot worse, and, you know, just a great individual play by Mario. You know, I think with Wake now, it's just kind of – it's going to be like a personnel thing. You know, I think with Buffalo, we're probably going to see a lot more heavy sets and a lot more run sets. So I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Jones and Mario Williams' snap numbers increase this week. And Cameron Wake is more of a third down player again, but, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And, you know, I saw a tweet from someone, one of the Dolphins beat writers this weekend, saying it was quoting Adam Gase before the season, saying that it takes 5 weeks for these guys to get going, to get gelled in a new system. And ironically enough, that was week 6. So I'm hoping that that's the case for the offensive staff, the defensive staff, and the personnel as well, because they all played their best game of the year as a collective group, you know, from anyone's standpoint. That you can't really argue that with a resounding victory that could have been a lot worse than it was. You know, they had the red zone breakdowns and the big run to Darius Hayward Bay, obviously. But this is a team that looked pretty good against a good team, and that kind of brings us forward to the next point, the Buffalo game, and you got into it a little bit there. You know, this team, even with Joe Philbin, they were capable of putting up some pretty good games, but the problem was the consistency and building on it week to week, and that's what I'm looking for this week in the Buffalo game, is how will they adapt to Buffalo's game plan now that there's a game film of the Dolphins actually playing successfully and having an opposing coach go against them and having a week worth of film to prepare for them. How are they going to adapt to that, and how are they going to alter their game plan accordingly? Offensively, defensively, you mentioned some of the snap counts going to be going back in the favor of Mario Williams and Jason Jones and those guys. Offensively, Buffalo's linebackers are playing as well as anybody right now. It's a kind of a mystery with Lorenzo Maldon. Is he still leading the league in sacks, or at least he's up there pretty high on the list? It's pretty crazy to say that. But I'm looking forward.
Jerry Hughes has always given us trouble.
He's a hell of a player. I loved him a lot in college, and then he kind of busted with the Colts there. But I just want to see the – I don't know if I want to see the same game plan or if I want to see something different. I just want to see them go with the ebbs and flows of the game, because they did that so well on Sunday, and they made second-half adjustments, and the Steelers just never had an answer. So that's my biggest area of concern going forward, is this the new – or the kind of the Adam Gase we thought we were going to get and the coaching staff we thought we were going to get, or was that just a blip on the radar that's kind of a outlier compared to what we're supposed to be seeing? So that's my big issue this week, is consistency. And I know that's such a vague thing to say and such a broad term, but what else can we really go with? Because all we have is the previous 5 games before this where they weren't very good and there were moments of brilliance, and this is the first time they dominated for 60 minutes. So I want to see that be a mainstay. I want to see this team go out and kick the crap out of somebody, because over the past, you know, 4 years with Ryan Tannehill in the lineup, the biggest bugaboo for this team has been the Bills and the Jets. And that's who we got in the next 2 games, is, you know, both home games with the bye week sandwich in between those two. So I just want to see us go out and out-coach Rex Ryan and Rob Ryan and out-coach Todd Bowles and Chan Gailey, because I think our coaching staff should be better than both those coaching staffs. And the Jets are a mess right now. Obviously, we'll get to that next week, but the Bills, Rob Ryan, to me, is still a joke. Their offense is what's really clicking right now with Tyrod Taylor and that running game going. But defensively, I think you got a lot of weaknesses on that defense where you can make some things happen, even though they're not playing like their weaknesses right now. But in the secondary, we saw the Jets carve them up earlier in the season, and I think that'd be the best way to attack them, is kind of attack them downfield again on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I think one thing that surprises me is I looked at some of the Bills' stats. They're actually giving up an average of over 100 yards rushing a game. So maybe we will see some more of those heavy personnel sets. You know, they limited Carlos Hyde this past week when they played the 49ers in terms of yards per carry. But between Hyde and Kaepernick, they rushed for over 105 yards just between those two guys. So, you know, maybe that's something Miami does try and exploit. I saw today that Shaq Lawson maybe will be active this week. He was always a pretty stout run defender, so maybe that gives them some extra presence on the edge, you know, in place of Hughes or Alexander, one of those guys. But, you know, I'll be interested to see. That said, though, I feel like that tandem of Kyle Williams and Marcell Dareus has always given Miami trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I think the last time we beat Buffalo was 2014 on that Thursday night game, if I'm not mistaken. And we basically ended up not running the ball. We used the short passing game pretty much the whole night and got a couple big plays out of it, and that was how we beat them. Buffalo this week, I feel like it's going to be one of those things where Miami, I would almost prefer they try and do the same game plan that they had against Pittsburgh, where they control the clock, let the Bills' defense kind of wilt out there in that heat, and you just kind of beat the Bills at their own game. This is almost one of those games where you kind of wish old Tony Sperano was on the sideline just trying to out-tough you. But, you know, hopefully Adam Gase has some things up his sleeve for Rex's defense. And, you know, obviously Rob Ryan over there, give him a rolling rock and a bag of chips or whatever he likes off that up-close thing he did. But and
some kind of foot magazine or something, you know. You might be the first Dolphins fan to ever clamor about the Tony Sperano days. So you have that
just for a week. Just
for one game, fair enough. Get those stupid sunglasses off the sideline at least for a little bit. Yeah, I'm with you on that. You know, you talked about Rob Ryan's defense being, you know, obviously the Ryan brothers, whatever you call them, they want to attack and they want to be aggressive, and they obviously do that with a lot of blitzes and exotic looks, and they'll send corners off the edge, they'll come from the slot, they'll come from the safety spot, and they'll blitz you. So I think maybe you are right with that, with those tight ends being back on the field, because you can kind of negate some of that aggressiveness with misdirection and deception, and that's what the Dolphins did on Sunday with those. Like I said, they came across the formation in motion and then kind of identified what the linebackers were doing. So if we can get some of that, some play-action boots against the grain with some multi-level reads for Ryan Tannehill, I think you can have a lot of success there. So I don't know about you. I don't think it's going to be a victory. I am hoping like hell that it is, because it'll be a fun bye week, you know, with 3-4, a chance to get back to 500 but against a bad Jets team the following week. I don't think it's going to happen. I want to, but I'm thinking maybe it's going to be something like a 23-17 type of game. What are you thinking from your end?
Yeah. You know, until the Dolphins go out on the field and prove they can actually stop a running team, you know, we saw what Tennessee did to us, and Buffalo's run offense is the best in the league. That doesn't speak too well for Miami's chances, I don't think. But, you know, hopefully this win kind of sparks them and gives them some momentum. Hopefully they've got a better plan for Buffalo. I agree. I feel like it's going to be a closer game, but, you know, Buffalo is probably the hottest team in the league right now. I hope I'm wrong, but I kind of feel like it's, you know, going to be a close game with Buffalo kind of pulling away at the end. I'll say 28-20 or something like that, but, you know, or 31-20, but, you know, hopefully we're wrong about that and Miami can get to the bye at 3-4. I think that'd give them a really nice chance to self-scout, and, the schedule kind of softens up in the back half. So, you know, if they can get past Buffalo and the Jets and get to 4-4, you know, who knows what could happen down the stretch.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to say that, because going into the season, I mean, those first four games were supposed to be the cakewalks, but this home stretch was supposed to be where we really took it, you know, got the record jumping off the screen there for you. But I don't know that it's set up that way anymore. I mean, obviously we beat Pittsburgh, but Buffalo's a tough game at home, and then the Jets are what they are. It was nice to see the Dolphins actually play to the home field advantage for once. And you mentioned the Bills being able to kind of wilt away a defense with their running game, but the Dolphins did it to the Steelers, you know, and Jay Ajayi, he was having a hell of a game up until that 62-yard run. And then he really, I kind of call it getting his, where, you know, he worked all game to get that run, because when you lean on a defense like that and you kind of knock him out for 12 rounds like a heavyweight fight, that last little punch there can, you know, can change the game in a heartbeat and put it away. And he did that. And it was exciting to see the Steelers players that they're throwing up and not being able to keep up with the Dolphins offense. So I'm hoping that we can put them in their dark jerseys again. And I think we're wearing the throwbacks this week, so I'm not sure if those are the green or the white ones. But
hopefully it's the white ones.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too, because, I mean, let's get them out in that sun and that canopy protecting us and get them tired. You mentioned the schedule a little bit right before this portion, and I'm looking at it right now, and yeah, it looks pretty favorable, because after that homestand, you go – the two California teams in San Diego and Los Angeles, then you're back home for another California team with probably the worst team in the league in the 49ers. And then Baltimore's, you know, they've lost three in a row. They're nothing special. Arizona's looking better. And then you got the AFC East to round out the year with the Jets, yeah, Bills, and
that
the
Arizona
Patriots.
Game's a 1 o'clock Eastern time zone game for a West Coast team. So,
and they don't travel well, very well when that
they
happens.
Don't travel,
so,
yeah.
So. I'm with you on that, man. I'm hoping that it works out for us. I'm thinking we might have a chance to possibly salvage things if we win on Sunday. If not, it's kind of back to the draft, which brings us into our next segment. Kevin's got a couple of defensive draft prospects for you, because I think the more we look at this roster, the more we realize that the defense needs more help than the offense, at least from a personnel standpoint. We got some keepers at receiver. Ajayi is looking like he might be a keeper. tight end's looking like a pretty fluid position that, you know, Adam Gase can work with. The offensive line looks decent when it's healthy. And then the quarterback's there. So I don't really have much for you from the draft prospect end. I told Kevin before the show, I watched some Patrick Mahomes because I have a full-on man crush on the kid. And his team got absolutely walloped in the Big 12 matchup with Western Virginia. And it was ugly from the rest of the team. But Mahomes made some plays on his own where he was, you know, moving the pocket and getting out and converting some long third downs and making some things happen with his legs. So it was an ugly game. I still impressed by the way he plays, but I'll let Kevin get to some of the defensive prospects that he looked at this weekend.
Yeah. So last week I touched on a lot of the defensive linemen, and you know, if Miami ends up winning a couple games, you're probably going to fall off of Myles Garrett, as much as I hate to say it. And I talked about Anthony Walker last week. So just seeing how disappointing our linebackers were, let's call it, against the Steelers. I found three inside backers I wanted to look at and three outside linebackers. So I'll touch on them all pretty quickly. Probably the best inside linebacker, in my opinion, after Anthony Walker is Reuben Foster out of Alabama. You know, he's 6'1", 240. He's not as big as some of those traditional Bama backers like Rolando McClain, Dante Hightower, or even Reggie Ragland from last year. He's more like a C.J. Mosley. He can cover. He's pretty fast and athletic compared to what Bama usually has there. If you watch that Tennessee game where Alabama just basically demolished them in every facet, proving once again they're the best team, he actually sniffs out a screen pass, and not only does he like come through and knock the right tackle about 4 yards back into the path of the running back, he's actually able to, with his free hand, to grab the running back and keep him from turning around. And Josh Dobbs, who has no eyebrows and is just awful, ends up trying to throw the ball anyway, and he goes for a pick six. You know, that play, you know, was almost like the play Donald Butler had in the Miami game where he sniffed out a screen pass against Le'Veon Bell, and that was the play where Lippitt almost got the pick when Landry Jones tried to throw it away before the two-minute warning. Foster was there. I watched Raekwon McMillan from Ohio State, their middle linebacker. He's about the same size as Ragland, 6'2", 240. He's fast and athletic, but, you know, for as much hype as he gets, and I think this is kind of systemic of Ohio State middle linebackers, you know, if they're near a pile, they're getting credited with a tackle, even if it's not them. James Laurinaitis was infamous for that. I didn't really see the impact, but he might have more of a scheme fit with the wide nine. You know, he wasn't really a sideline-to-sideline guy. He gets Velcroed a little too easily. I'd like to see more of him, and maybe he, you know, kind of ends up being that Stephen Tulloch or Brandon Spikes type of guy. If you're looking for a big thumper like that, I actually got to see Kendall Beckwith out of LSU live week one when they played Wisconsin at Lambeau. He's 6'2", 252. He looks the part of the NFL guy. Definitely a two-down guy. He's not fast enough to play sideline to sideline or cover, but you know, as much as the thinking is going towards a passing league, I don't think having a two-down Mike linebacker is such a bad thing, and it certainly behooves Miami to get one so they can move Kiko Alonso outside, because, you know, that modern-day Mike term that got thrown around, I feel like that's straight from Tannenbaum, and it's just nonsensical to me. The best linebackers are bigger guys who can stuff the run in the middle anyway. But Beckwith is another guy I think you could probably get kind of in the third or fourth round area. Some outside linebackers. I kind of looked at some guys that are more suited to what Miami's going to be running. This one is actually a favorite of the guy Todd Finn on thefins.com. Zach Cunningham, he's an outside linebacker from Vanderbilt, 6'3", 230. Kind of almost looks like a big receiver out there, but he made a key play, and Vanderbilt upset Georgia for their first road win in the SEC, and I don't even know how long, but he made the stop on, I believe it was Nick Chubb, on a 4th-and-1, got off the tight end's block, ran around, used the wrong arm and on the fullback, and stopped Nick Chubb short of the first down to lock that ball game down.
That's no small
pretty
task.
Long and lanky, but he's not afraid to pop you. Boomer on thefins.com kind of loves this next guy, Jared Davis out of Florida. I really haven't seen too many Florida games this year, but you know, you look at his stat line, through 6 games, he's got 48 tackles, so 8 a game, 3.5 of them for loss and 2 sacks, and he's got a pretty good build at 6'1", about 240, pretty fast. And then I'll kind of plug a guy that he's probably going to be a late-round pick at this point, or maybe even an undrafted guy, but I got to see him play once this year and last year in their bowl game against Florida State, but Stephen Taylor out of University of Houston. He's an undersized guy. He's about 6 foot, 225. But for as small as he is, he's actually pretty physical. And I wrote down DeAndre Levy of Detroit as a comparison, just from sort of a body type perspective. But he's pretty fast. He's pretty physical. Got good hands for a smaller guy. You know, he packs a lot of pop. And Miami could really use that outside. You know, they may have Kiko Alonso coming back because he's a restricted free agent. But I honestly think you can improve upon all three of the guys that they primarily used in the game against Pittsburgh. So those are my six guys I kind of looked at. And if you're looking at some of the linebackers, maybe those guys warrant some more look as this college season wears on.
And that's why we're the Finalysis podcast, guys, because that's some in-depth coverage you're not going to get anywhere else from any other podcast. So, Kevin, thanks a lot for doing that. We really appreciate that. I'm definitely excited for next year's draft because we're getting an early look at these guys with the Dolphins' record being what it is. Hopefully we can do some more self-scouting, as you said, and get back into the thick of things with the win at Buffalo next week. That about does it for us here. Do you got anything else you wanted to talk about, Kevin?
No, I think that's it. Just hopefully we can beat Buffalo and make something out of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, you know, 3-4 going into the bye certainly would put us in the right direction. So thanks for listening again, guys. Make sure you check out the Perfectville podcast because we are a Perfectville association with Sam Marcoux and Chris Cullen. Give us a follow on Twitter. I am at Travis_Wrights. He is at KevinMD4. We'll look forward to your follows there. Don't forget to check out Write Travis Write, my blog portion of Perfectville. And yeah, that's about it for us from Perfectville and the Finalysis podcast. And you guys have a good rest of your night.
Thanks for listening to the Finalysis with Travis Wingfield and Kevin Dern. Subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. And go to welcometoperfectville.com for the very best coverage of your Miami Dolphins. Fins up.